Cult Sentinel Podcast, episode 18. Slipped off the cover on my soul. Hello, my name is Joe Moore. I'm your host this evening on the Occult Sentinel Podcast. Today on the show we have Clint Marsh. Clint is the author of the book, The Mentalist Handbook. He was the first ever requested author for the show by a listener, which is a pretty interesting thing. So hopefully we get more requests from listeners for people they'd like to see on the show. And if I think they're interesting enough, then we'll get them on the show. Clint had a pretty interesting book, so it was a pleasure speaking to him, and there was some fantastic artwork in there. And we have a pretty fun conversation going all over the place, talking about Clint's background, his future, and current situation, and the book as well. And without further ado, here we go with the interview, and I'll see you on the other side. So today on the show, I have Clint Marsh. Clint is the author of The Mentalist's Handbook, an explorer's guide to astral, spirit, and psychic worlds. Clint, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe.
So to start out with, Clint, could you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah, I live in California, and been out here about 12 years, but I grew up in the Midwest. In Iowa, and was raised in a small town, and I got interested in the subject matter of the Mentalist Handbook, which is an exploration of all kinds of exploration of unknown phenomena, really. I got interested in that at a very early age because when I was about six, my parents moved into a house that came with all these occult books in it, and they bought the books with the house. They had no use for the books, but they were ours then, and those were some of the first books that I ever read, and that got me interested in all kinds of topics, and kind of turned me into a book lover, you might say. I'm a writer now, and yeah, still interested in all that same sort of thing.
Well, that's perfect.
Yeah, I guess so. It makes a pretty neat package. Yeah.
So you have a cool little side project, or maybe that's your main project, Wonderella Press, where you publish all sorts of interesting little pamphlets, human-scale pamphlets, you call them, right?
Yeah, I like to think of it as human-scale publishing, as opposed to something that's larger and less personal. It's zines, really, you know? And I've done that for about 15 years. And always enjoyed just meeting people through it, really, the social aspect of it. And so, I don't know, about 10 years ago, I started writing a series I called the Camelopard series. That's a Latin word for giraffe. And I thought, well, this is going to be about elevating our consciousnesses. So I'm going to have this giraffe as the mascot. And the Camelopard series was just about different occult topics, and I laid it all out as a treatise on what I called ether, or the etheric plane, and visiting that place is what I call mentalism. And when you practice mentalism, then you can do things like ESP, out-of-body experiences, speak with spirits, so forth. And I just started making those zines and gave them to my friends and my family and traded them with other people and met all kinds of people, and eventually got the attention of Wiser Books, who wanted to publish a collection of that.
Oh, that's really cool. And so the material in the book pretty much comes from your Camelopard series?
Yeah, the book is a very light edit of the zines, really just enough to make it a cohesive single read.
That's great you were able to hang on to copies for that long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I still sell the single issues to anybody that likes them.
Oh, cool. Before we dive too deep into your book, I just want to go over some of the names of the other publications that you put out through Wonderella. Goblin Great. Proofings, Goblin Proofing ones, Chicken Coop on Correct. Gnoming, yeah. which I read.
On Gnoming, yeah.
Successful Hunting and Cooking of Gnomes, yeah. Wandering Wizards, Welcome, and you have a few more, right?
We do, yeah. I always like to have humor in what I do, and to me that's my way in to any topic, and so I grew up believing in gnomes and fairies and goblins and wizards and all that, and when I was older and ready to write about them, then I took it as a tongue in cheek almost. And even though I was a true believer, but that was my way into it. And I still like to have that sense of play and sense of humor with it. But each of these things also got a real personal side to them. Each of those projects does.
Well, it definitely is reflected in your book. Your book is pretty funny.
Oh, thanks. I hope.
No, I liked it a lot. Yeah. Your sense of humor definitely comes through, and I'm glad. So one of the first things that struck me is you quoted Aleister Crowley at the beginning
right
of Lesson 1. Little brother, give me thy hand, for the first step is hard.
Yeah, that's just a nice phrase, a nice saying there from him. It comes from one of his essays in his book in his zine series, the Equinox, and he was a real influence, more as a publisher and just as a character than as a magician to me, because I don't think that we get as a culture anymore too many just straight outlandish occultists, and so I've always really respected him for being himself and just being over the top like that. I've got to say, when I found out that he had published his series of journals, the Equinox, then I said, wow, this is really what I've got to do too. I've got to try this just to put my ideas out there and just as a bit of an homage to him and other pamphleteers of the Victorian and a little bit later era too.
Great. So overall, the book seems to be a pretty coherent system for developing mentalist type faculties. Was that the general goal here?
That's one of them. I've got to say that I'm not a psychic. I've tried all of these exercises and had different results from them. I will say that I have had what I think are some experiences that are definitely part of the ether. But what it's about is really just getting people to try different things, different exercises with their consciousness or with their awareness, and see what happens, because I really do think that there's something to that. Just as we can pay more attention to ourselves and the people around us and our surroundings, then we're going to notice things that we hadn't noticed before and that can't necessarily be explained by the five senses that we use every day.
That's pretty profound what you say there. It's really like moving out of your normal daily consciousness into something other.
Right.
And experiencing the world in a different way. Different set of goggles.
Yeah, and I call it the ether and mentalism.
Now, have you got a chance to talk to any people who have worked through the book and had pretty interesting experiences?
Well, as part of the zine series and then as part of the book, I regularly encourage people in the writing, in my writing, to get back in touch with me about their experiences. And people do all the time. I got an email today. I got a handful of emails last week. I get letters in the mail. And I always write back. So, you know, if people are reading it and are interested in sharing their experiences, then they're free to write to me. And yeah, and people come to me with all kinds of great stories and questions and experiences. And, you know, sometimes I can help them, and other times I just have to say, well, you know, good luck. Great what you're doing. So, yeah.
That's perfect. Now, Clint, are you an artist?
A visual artist. I've done some visual art. Just had regular training in high school, I guess. Didn't go on to do that. Really focused on writing. I got a journalism degree from University of Iowa. And then I've been a writer in different capacities ever since. I do some visual art still. I was just I just graduated the Waldorf Teacher Training, which is a
great
program based on Rudolf Steiner's teachings. He's another old style occult pamphleteer. I like to think of him.
And, how did you like the teacher training?
What's that?
How did you like the teacher training there?
The teacher training was just life changing. Yeah, in answer to your question, what we did every weekend when we met was to try different forms of art. And Steiner had his own idea on how painting should be, how sculpture should be, how movement, dance, and singing should be, all these things. And so every weekend we would try those techniques. And I've got to say, you know, it just stretched me in so many ways. I'm really grateful for the program.
Cool. Yeah, I've been interested in the Waldorf system he developed for a while now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you should check it out.
Is it true that they encourage the students to believe in magical creatures?
Well, fairies.
Yeah.
encourage the children.
Yeah.
I would say that gnomes and fairies are part of the curriculum almost.
Oh, that's fantastic.
As when the kids are in kindergarten, and it sort of gets phased out as they get older, but I've been in first grade classes where the teacher is still talking about the gnomes. They're just different words for it later on as the kids get older. But I think, to me at least, it all means the same thing. So if you want to call something a gnome or an earthquake, well, you know, who's to say what the difference is, really?
All right, so the Camillipod, with that name, you're really getting at people trying to raise their consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a number of ways to do that, obviously, and you chose to go this way with it. And you ran into or covered a lot of the same things that other people run into using other systems.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things that's been coming up for me lately is this notion of dwellers on the threshold. I was wondering if you could maybe discuss what these are and how you suggest people work through them.
Dweller on the threshold in my book is an entity, and it's a place, and it's a state of mind, and it's a station in life almost. And the way I've laid it out is as it's centered around an encounter that you'll have when practicing mentalism. And what it's there for is to give you a chance to basically get over yourself and work through the things that have held you back in the past. So it's about overcoming fear and doubt. And in my own experience, I've got to say that you could have this encounter, but you might need to have it again and again, because, you know, we don't, I would say very few of us ever get past all those insecurities or those nagging things that plague us. And in fact, we pick up more as we get older sometimes.
I think you're right. Yeah. So it could be almost like a particular trauma or insecurity. It takes on a, almost like a talismanic spirit form.
The dweller?
Sometimes, yeah.
Could be, yeah.
It could be, yeah.
It's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, in a lot of the work I do, we run into that kind of concept frequently, and it's a very psychological thing. Breath work. People are pretty much consistently dealing with that kind of material, not too much other material.
It's part of daily life and waking life and dreaming life, and it just seems to never leave a person alone, you know. So it's good to face it, it's good to own up to it, or just put yourself in a place where you can really work on it.
Yeah. So you said growing up, these were the first kinds of books you were reading, books on mentalism and occultism.
Well, I wouldn't say reading, but I still can't read them.
Exploring.
Yeah, just gawking at, really. I love them. Yeah.
So when would you say you had your first sort of consciousness expanding or paranormal type experience doing these exercises?
I would say, I don't know when it happened. Lately, I've been, I'm going to continue the Camelopard series now that the book's out, but I'm going to continue it. I'm going to continue issuing the zines, not as instructional pamphlets anymore, but as autobiographical stories about my life and my experiences with magic and the unseen world. And so I've been doing a lot of time travel, really. I'll sit and think of something I want to write about from when I was very young. I'm just going chronologically with these stories and try to remember one detail, a few more details, and really just, it's a meditation. And and pretty soon I'm back there to where, you know, I was six and in front of the fireplace with these books. And I'm recalling now something that I should include in the stories, and that's an experience I had where I couldn't have been older than 12, maybe, but I was outside in the backyard. We grew up in a, my brother and my parents and I grew up in a house just on the edge of the woods in Iowa, so we always had great big bunch of woods to run through, and there's a river down there, and very natural place. And as I would learn about nature spirits and fairies and witches and all this, then they all lived in the woods there. And so I would spend a lot of time there wondering about it all. And I do remember a time, it must have been my first kiss, because I was laying there just looking at the clouds, and I kissed something that was right there above me. I don't know what it was, but and maybe that was a nature spirit, I don't know. But that happened kind of spontaneously, and I think it happened because I was just open to it, you know. Just,
wow, that's interesting.
Very free and just, you know, relaxed. And that's how I think these things happen. You either have to put yourself in a relaxed state, or you have to work yourself so hard that your body just says, I give up, and lets go itself. And so, yeah, I'd say that's a pretty early one. And then just having a wild imagination as a kid. I'd read anything or see a movie or TV show or hear a song on the radio or see a picture, and it would just really affect me imaginatively. And so there are boogeymen all over the place. I could be an astronaut. I could be Superman and just go to all these places or be surrounded by these entities who may or may not be there, but that's what the book's really about, is if you can imagine it, well, you can make it real, for better or worse.
Mostly for better.
One hopes, yeah, one hopes. If you're sitting down and trying to do something, then you want it to be for better.
I didn't finish my question earlier because I forgot. We got sidetracked, but you have some fantastic artwork in here, visual artwork. did you do these, or did you have a friend do them? Or
the illustrator for the book is named Jeff Hoke.
Okay,
and Jeff is an amazing fine artist in Monterey, which is about 2 hours drive from here. And he's one of my best friends. We get together a couple times a year. Don't see each other too often, but we're really close. He meeting him around the same time I started doing the writing for the first Camilla part was just a real watershed for me. It was helped me have amazing breakthroughs, because he's older than I am, but he and I have a lot of the same interests. And so I started talking to him because I saw he was making a zine called The Guide to Lost Wonder. And I traded zines with him, and I went down to see him and talk to him about his work, and we just kind of hit it off. And I realized, wow, here's somebody I can talk to about history and magic and art, and just really have a good conversation and you know, have a non-judgmental conversation with somebody who really does care about it all. And as I was writing these essays, I would take them to Jeff, and eventually I asked him, I love your art, would you be willing to draw pictures to illustrate these? And he said yes. And so he was the illustrator for the series, and he went on and published 10 issues of The Guide to Lost Wonder, and then those, along with some additional material, were collected by Weiser as well a year or two before my book, and that was collected as The Museum of Lost Wonder, which is an amazing book. You've got to go find that. So Jeff's always been there for me as a friend and as an illustrator too.
So yeah, I really dig his art, and the inside cover, kind of the dust jacket.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was my favorite part. Just a huge kind of poster, poster.
Right.
That was the first thing that I actually saw. I said, "Oh, there's something in here."
Yeah, so, right. It's a surprise.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And
I'm glad you like that.
Yeah, and I think I will check out some of Jeff Hoke's work.
Please do. Yeah. He would be someone you'd really enjoy, I think. Yeah,
and it's really interesting how pivotal the zine movement was for you and Jeff. I think I came along a little too late in the game to actually have seen zines circulating.
It has changed quite a bit with the web, and even more so recently with weblogs. It seems to me that nearly everyone's got something they want to write about and tell people, because more and more people are making blogs now, and to me it's got a lot of the same momentum behind it. People want to share their ideas, they want to reach out to other people, and they want to share words and pictures and even share videos with it, and so I think it's great. for me personally, I can't do too much of it at the expense of my published printed stuff because I just love the form too much. So I continue to do zines. In fact, I'm publishing a new series now called The Pamphleteer, which is always a short pamphlet with lots of reviews of other people's zines and some articles about publishing and some articles, also some essays previewing upcoming projects of mine. So I continue to do zines. I probably always will.
That's great. Now, in practicing mentalism, have you come up with any kind of underlying philosophy that you align yourself with?
As far as a school?
Well, or if you've created your own philosophy, any kind of thing like that.
Mm-hmm. I just recently put together a partial bibliography for the book. A reader had written to me and asked if I had a bibliography for it, and I realized, wow, I didn't. So a couple weeks ago, I spent some time at home digging around through my bookcases here and listing all the books that I remember being influenced by, and also trying to go back and remember other books that I don't have anymore that influenced me too. And when I was finished with it, and the bibliography is not done by any means, but when I was finished for now, this first draft of it, I looked at it and I was really kind of pleased to see it. I had some Rosicrucian books in there, I had some theosophy books in there, I had some Steiner books in there, I had some Crowley books in there, and a Freemason book, and all sorts of other books as well, but it was really nice, I guess I've got to say, to see how eclectic the sources were that influenced me. One of the reasons why I decided to switch from a instructional series to this autobiographical series now is that in spending all the time in the Waldorf teacher training, I was just learning too much about Steiner to not be overly influenced by it. To the exclusion, perhaps, of other philosophies. And as far as a philosophy of my own, I think that the closest thing that is out there is the practice of any kind of art and how an artist can have an idea and then through concentration on that idea and through practice of their medium can bring something out that's tangible and quote-unquote real. So making the book itself or making a zine or making podcast or a blog or whatever, these are all things that take what we've got inside and they put it outside of us. And so if I had to say that there was a philosophy or a school, it's that mentalism and the creative process are brother and sister, if not closer.
Interesting. Are you familiar with the work of Austin Osman Spare?
I'm not.
He, I don't know too much about him, but he has some fantastic art. He was around a contemporary of Crowley way back, and he developed his own kind of magical technique, scrying techniques, and came out with some extremely far out art for the time period.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just very visionary art coming out of these magical worlds he was visiting. Fantastic stuff. That was his one of his primary things, and seems to be a theme that I've bumped into recently a few times in the past few months.
Visual art.
Really, well, trying to create something influenced by the etheric realms.
Yeah,
by your experiences to make it real, as you say, or maybe to just try to express it a different way and see how that feels.
Right. Yeah, make sense of it.
Yeah.
Be able to communicate it to someone else, because that's sometimes the most difficult thing with any kind of, well, even the word spirituality is so loaded, and to try to explain to someone else what it is that you believe or what you think is real, or even having just a plain old conversation and trying to get your point across to someone can be such a daunting thing that it's just wonderful that we've got other means at our fingertips, really, with visual art and music and all these ways to express something that is otherwise inexpressible.
Yeah, I certainly agree. Well, Clint, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thank you, hopefully
we can get you on the show again in the future once you start publishing your continuation of the Camilla Pod.
Well, thank you. I would encourage you and all your listeners to go to wonderella.org and see what I'm working on.
Yeah, Clint has some great stuff up there. So I will certainly link to you, and hopefully we can speak again in the future. Thanks, Clint.
Thank you, Joe. Bye.
Bye. And there you have it, Clint Marsh. So I hope you enjoyed it, and come back to listen to the next show. The next interview should be with Adam Gorightly. Adam ran a long-running podcast called the Untamed Dimensions Podcast, and that covered everything strange and the occult and conspiracy and high-tech weirdness, UFOs, ghosts, all that kind of stuff. And he went all over the planet with that. And he's also written a number of books, including one of the first biographies or histories on the Manson family. Also somebody who was friends with Lee Harvey Oswald. The funny thing is, this is the most non-magical personality we've had on the show so far. I'm not sure I'm going to keep that up or not, but it just kind of happened that way. He's a very interesting character, and I thought it was very worth having him on the show to see what he's up to and, you know, see where other people go with their head trip. So that's coming. Another thing that I've been up to that I got to speak to Greg of the Occult of Personality podcast recently about was this group called Evolver. Evolver is a kind of a social network that exists online and in the real world. And it's pretty much a kind of a cultural nexus for people who are questing, but are also at the same time questing to transform culture to something better. Culture being kind of the expression of biological needs. But hopefully the end goal would really to be to have a really happy, better world situation, from everything from science to finance to food to spirituality, all that kind of stuff. So that's really what I've been up to lately, kind of working on setting up Evolver Boston, which I got in touch with the people over at Reality Sandwich who are putting that together, and said, hey guys, I want to try to help you guys set this up. So they got on the phone with me and talked to a couple of the guys over there, and they said, yep, go for it, you're blessed. And starting later this May, we're going to have our first meeting. And in July, we're having a bigger meeting. Should be more like a party, but we'll see how that plays out. And really, this ties back into a lot of the themes that have been coming up on the show earlier on about magical cooperation. For instance, Wiccans, Golden Dawn initiates, and Thelemic initiates not necessarily getting together and talking. And, you know, including Buddhist people, Hindu people, just getting together and trying to build a better world. And this really is that, you know. It's an effort to help people come together, meet like souls, find the others, as Terrence McKenna would say, and go from there. It's kind of what I see as one of the next necessary steps, instead of people being isolated and not having people to talk to other like souls about, you know, getting stuck in your day job, not being able to talk about magic or transformative culture or anything enlightened, and then going home to friends and family who also aren't necessarily up on all different subjects, maybe up on one or two or none or something like that. And, you know, that's fine. You know, they have their own dharma, but they may not necessarily be up on these subjects. And it, when you're up on these subjects, you really want to have a place to express them and discuss them and potentially even actualize them, you know, actually do something and change your life, your world, or change the community's world. So that's really what I've been up to. Evolver.net, I'm on there. I'm a member. It's kind of like a funny thing, because it's kind of like a Facebook, but not really, because people are not really sharing those aspects of their life. They're actually writing really heartfelt essays, posting news, starting projects like video projects, permaculture projects, all that kind of stuff. So if you're interested, head over there, evolver.net, evolver.net. It comes out of realitysandwich.com, which is a fantastic online magazine. And I highly recommend both those sites. And if you have any questions, get in touch with me through the comments section of the site, and I'll email you back. And we can go from there. Hope you all have a great day, and see you on the next podcast. Bye.
What if we were entering into a new time? A time when the very systems of control and commerce that we had believed to be the status quo were somehow no longer relevant? What if we were faced with a new medium? A new network? A new system that connected the people and places of the world in a new way? What if that system is here? What if that time is now? One, two, 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 one, two,
and brief